I was holding on to the limiting beliefs that we all have deep down inside, fear of rejection, imposter syndrome. And the way that it manifested for me was through perfectionism. Oh, it's not ready yet. Oh, I can make this better before I share it. And that's always a losing proposition, but especially in our digital age, you are penalized by not sharing. And everyone who is sharing their crappy first drafts, they're all being rewarded for it because they get feedback, and then that starts a beautiful flywheel effect.
Hey, it's Zach here, and super quick before we dive into the show, if you haven't already, I want to make sure that you have subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'll even send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter. All right, on to today's episode. My name is Zach Arnold, and I'm a former Hollywood film and television editor turned career strategist and the creator of Optimize Yourself, where I help artists, creatives, and storytellers just like you design the more balanced, more sustainable, and more fulfilling creative career that you deserve. In a nutshell, I'm Tim Ferriss meets Ted Lasso, minus the mustache, because I am obsessed with both learning everything I can about optimizing human potential while also inspiring you to realize yours. If you are ready to step outside your comfort zone, let's dive right in and unlock the optimized version of you. Hello, and welcome to the Optimize Yourself podcast, where I share honest and candid conversations with best-selling authors, world-class athletes, Hollywood legends, elite experts in a variety of fields, as well as everyday people that are achieving extraordinary things. It means the world to me that with all the podcast choices out there, you have chosen to invest your valuable time, energy, and attention with me. Now, before we get started, don't forget to visit optimizeyourself.me/podcast so you can subscribe, leave a review, and so you can also download your unique customized podcast playlist where I'm going to send you the 5 best expert interviews from our archives to help you achieve your specific goals. So on that note, without further ado, let's get right to today's guest. I'm here today with Nick Milo. And Nick, I gotta be honest, a little tough to put together an intro for you because you're not just one thing. You're kind of a jack of many, many different trades. You've built businesses in the fitness industry. You've worked in the film industry, which is actually how you and I met. And I'm sure we'll get a little bit more into how we were initially connected. You've made the transition from the football field to civil engineering. You've done public speaking. You've done content creation. And probably the reason that we're here the most is to talk more about your ability to help people link their thinking and better understand personal knowledge management. But I really want to better understand your story and how you're really kind of both a jack of all trades and a master of one. So needless to say, my biggest concern today is how in the world am I going to do this in only 90 minutes? Because we could talk for hours and hours. But having said that, I want to start by just welcoming you and telling you how excited I am that we can finally get this conversation on the record.
Zach, I'm so excited to be here as well. And it's wild to know you from the earlier context of TV editing and now being able to talk with you in this new context. I think that'll just really help us bridge different worlds. And it's kind of, I think, on point with what you're saying about this jack of all trades business that we all need to have a little bit more of.
Well, where I want to start is not so much diving right into the weeds of personal knowledge management. We could talk about Obsidian and, you know, creativity and all this other stuff. But where I actually want to start is better understanding your journey and talk a little bit more about where you and I initially connected, because it seems like it was in a completely different universe. And it's almost like I'm talking to your twin brother, right? Because things have changed so much since we first connected, so much so that I knew you as Nick Miladragovic. And all of a sudden I'm talking to Nick Milo, personal knowledge management expert. So for the sake of this conversation, I'd love to start by going back to either where you and I first connected or what led you to the point where you and I first connected.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess what led me to the point of connecting with you was extremely strong desire to figure out how to break into editing. So just some quick backstory, 2016, moved to Los Angeles, was able to interview to be a writer's assistant on an NBC show called Conviction. I was turned down for that role by the showrunner, but that showrunner recommended me for the post producer. So I was able to interview, and then I got a role as post production assistant, starting from the bottom up. schlepping soggy cheeseburgers across town. So that was great. And that was, you know, after being in some other professions where I was sort of the person that had all the answers to taking a back seat, it was really quite humbling, but I wanted to break into TV. I just didn't know quite where. A couple of years later, I figured out, as great as it is to be on this producer track, going from like a post-production assistant to a coordinator, coordinator becomes a supervisor, supervisor would become the post-producer or associate producer sometimes, as you know, very well. But that role continues to grow, as you also probably know. They're no longer associate producers. They keep on going up the ranks because of how post is expanding.
Yeah, we could do 90 minutes just clarifying all the different titles in post-production and what a producer really means. We'll save that for another day. But yes, okay. That is one very specific track.
So I think it was 2018, 19. I can't remember quite then. And I felt that there was two paths and they were diverging. Either I could continue going up this producer path or looking over at the people that we were helping to, you know, make sure everything was working with, the editors. And I was on a particular show on Netflix called Chambers. And my producer there was amazing. So Gina just allowed me to do whatever I wanted to, as long as I was doing my job as a coordinator at that time. So we had a lot of downtime and I would just sit in with the assistant editors and the editors. And I thought, you know what? I want to go down this track. I think it's a bit more creative. I can really sink my teeth into this. I think it's a better use of what naturally makes me come alive. Great. So I had wonderful exposure. I was getting paid to learn, but I wanted to accelerate. You know, I didn't come out of college into this role. I had already done a bunch of things. I was a little bit older, I felt, for my years in the entertainment industry. And I wanted to accelerate and fast track my progress. So I was like, how can I break in? And that's when I found you. I was like, okay, how can I best take advantage of my time, take advantage of these amazing editors and assistant editors I'm working with? I don't want to lose a moment of it. So yeah, I enrolled in your program and learned as much as possible about how to do all the right things and how to not do all the wrong things and to fast track that progress. So it was about a year after that I got my first editing credit. And that was on a show called Coyote, starring Michael Chiklis, best known from The Shield. So yeah, that's sort of the editing story.
Well, I would say that we could easily spend an hour or more just talking about how in the world did you go from, I decided I want to be an assistant editor, and a year later, you're getting your first editing credit on a Michael Chiklis show. We can maybe talk about that a little bit more, but I think what we're going to find underneath, as far as all the different specializations that you have and more your mindset and your approach, something tells me that pattern is not unique to just, I accelerated from assistant editor to editor. That kind of seems like a core foundation of everything you've done, where you said, I want to do this. I'm going to find a way to accelerate the process and I'm going to find a way to learn faster. And so I want to dig into that. But another thing that I want to point out that I think is so interesting is that knowing more about your background and knowing what you were looking to do, it's not a coincidence that you happened upon me. Because what I always look at is the intersection of different areas. The intersection is where we find our value and our uniqueness. And it wasn't just at the time, I was a little bit more focused specifically on, I want to help people down the editing path. And now I've broadened out considerably. But that was one thing. But another area is that I'm trying to find a way to optimize or accelerate that process like you were looking for. But I also, one of the values that I put out into the world is that you have to do it sustainably by also focusing on your health and your mindset. So it doesn't surprise me, as somebody that has a very significant athletic background, my guess is, and maybe I'm wrong, but that intersection, whether conscious or subconsciously, was probably another reason you're thinking, oh, here's somebody that's done it that also values these things that I do.
100%. I mean, you were immediately speaking my language. I mean, just the books that you would mention, or being able just to talk about habits and these different ways of being productive and thinking about the industry holistically. And then, yeah, the fitness aspect, you know, Ninja Warrior. I was like, heck yeah, he's doing that. That was actually something I always wanted to do. My life went into a different direction where I didn't really pursue it. But so just everything about you, I was like, this is the person. This is the person who's thinking on in the same multidimensional way that I naturally think and want to. Those are the types of people that I want to surround myself with.
Well, and it's funny because I can usually tell when I have students in my classes, whether they're in the small groups, sometimes even just those that are kind of in the self-guided community that are doing the office hour sessions, but especially my one-on-one students, I can always tell after a session or two in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I don't know if it's going to be in 6 months or 3 years, this person's going to be on the podcast. I knew you were going to be one of those students that ended up here, but never in a million years did I think that it was going to be because of all the things that we're going to talk about today. You were so focused and so organized about, I need to get into the editor's chair. And if I remember correctly, I think you were in one of my classes right before the pandemic hit. Is that roughly the timeline?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, obviously, everything went all over the place with the pandemic. And first there was no work, then there was too much work. And now we're back in the place, at least as of the recording of this conversation, where it's like, where are all the jobs? Where's the industry? What the hell happened? And you kind of disappeared for a long time. And then from my perspective, the way that you came back into my life is that I was doing a podcast on a show with one of the top productivity experts, Mike Vardy. And we were talking afterwards. He's like, oh, by the way, we both know Nick Milo. I'm like, I don't know who Nick Milo is. Who's Nick Milo? It's like, oh, you know, he talks about Obsidian and linking your thinking. And he used to work in Hollywood. I'm like, oh, that's great. But I mean, I know a Nick. I don't know a Nick Milo. He's like, wait, how about Nick Milodragovich? Nick? You know Nick? And all of a sudden I got introduced to this completely different career path that you had built for yourself. So there's this big giant knowledge gap that I have between you were dead set on, I'm going to be in the editor's chair and I'm going to be the next great TV editor. And all of a sudden you're the guy on YouTube that teaches Obsidian. Big giant gap for me there. Talk to me about this career pivot, because so many people listening right now are asking themselves the question, how the hell do I pivot where I am in my career? Because what I'm doing is no longer sustainable.
Sure. I'll try to maybe give you the onion approach and start with like just a really fast surface level.
Yes, let's do that.
Yep. And then we can dig in as needed. But because I've bounced around a bit and just because of maybe how I'm naturally wired, I've always taken a lot of notes and done a lot with notes. And that's allowed me, it's been like a superpower. So when the pandemic hit, there was this really nerdy community with a new application. It was called Obsidian, and it allowed me to take notes in a Markdown, which is a format that allows you to basically future-proof your notes forever. So they're not caught in Evernote or Word, and you're trapped in somebody else's file format. And I just started nerding out with everybody else, talking about these things, and I had a few novel new ideas, and those things sort of resonated. And then they're like, tell us more. And so the snowball became the avalanche. And I found that, whoa, now this thing that's actually been in the background fueling all of my efforts, my career efforts and my pivots, has now actually flipped and become in the foreground. And that's what people want to hear about. I'm uniquely positioned to do it. The pandemic, everyone being, you know, locked in, they all wanted to organize their information and figure out this whole dynamic. So it was right place, right time, but it was also, you know, over a decade of experiences leading up to that point. And then I had this really strange dilemma. I remember I was being offered to assistant edit on Better Call Saul, and I actually had to hesitate. I had to hesitate before saying yes. I actually, it was painstaking over 3 days where I was like, I've always wanted to be on this show. Why am I hesitating? And it's because this new thing, linking your thinking, was really taking off, and I was helping people get their thoughts in order and actually think better than they ever had before. And it was something that I always loved, except now I was getting paid to do it. And then I had to juxtapose that with editing. And so it was a huge back and forth battle there. So that's sort of the short version of it.
I think that without having all the context of Obsidian and the linking you're thinking, I think I remember at some point, it was one of the last conversations we had when you were still a student, where you might have been deliberating this. I have some memory of you and I maybe talking about how you had this opportunity and we were trying to figure out the cost benefits. Maybe I'm making that up in my head, but that might have been one of the last conversations we had before you disappeared into the ether.
The last conversation I think that we had that I remember, it was at an event and I can't remember what it was. And it was the wrong time to talk to you about that because we should be socializing. But I was like, Zach, you know, like I'm really organizing things and I want to show you like kind of how I'm doing things here. But we had to talk to other people. And I was like, wrong time for that. But yeah, the seeds were sort of there. The energy was there. Taking a lot of, because I knew you would love it because of the frameworks that you go over in your course. was like, the spreadsheet, right? How we can like find the right people. That was some of the stuff that I was doing in Obsidian in different ways. I'm like, this is really fascinating stuff, and I want to show you more of that. So yeah, that was, I think, our last conversation. It was right as I think the paths were starting to part.
Yeah. And I would imagine that most people, especially in this current climate, but just in general, if they're in a position where like their dream project were, in your case, it was being an assistant editor on Better Call Saul, most people, the vast majority would say, are you crazy? Of course you're going to say yes. But I can relate to that internal voice, kind of that gut feeling of something about this doesn't feel right. And even though everybody would advise me to say hell yes and not think twice, there's that voice that's saying, I don't know, there's something about this that doesn't feel like the path that I'm on. Because I went through a very similar journey as well, where just as my career was really taking off when I was working on Empire, that's when all of a sudden this little hobby of doing this podcast with my hiking group, all of us in the fitness and post community, all of a sudden that was becoming a thing that was no longer in the background. It was in the forefront. And people were asking for my advice, like, how do I not feel like I get hit by a truck at the end of the day as an editor? How do I try to fit in movement or exercise? What can I be doing for lower back pain, right? It wasn't so much about career development or productivity or creativity back then, but that's where it started. And that's where all of a sudden it wasn't a matter of, oh my God, I have the opportunity to work on another season of the number one show on television. The thought in my head was, yeah, but when am I going to have time to record my podcasts, right? Yes. And I could tell that that's what I was being pulled towards, right? I had to push myself to be able to take more of the editing work, but I just felt this natural pull. It's like you're being called to do this thing. And it sounds like you were very much feeling that calling as well.
100%. And that's a really nice way to put it. Yeah, this calling, it was like this vocation, everything that I had worked up towards had uniquely aligned with the macro trends of society. I was like, I have to go in this direction. I mean, I ended up doing Better Call Saul, but it really tore me apart. And I was working really long days. I was only able to do it because of remote work at the time. So I was able to work on one thing, but immediately transition and be confident that I could work on linking your thinking aspects and then immediately transition back as I needed to. So that's something that I don't think I would have been able to accomplish in the office. So, but there was just even so, it was just too stressful. And there just came that point where I was like, okay, that Better Call Saul is going to be it. That's going to be my last show. And how can it not, like, I love going out with a bang. I was like, that's the best. I was able to even have and help edit one of the final scenes in the series finale. So that's great people, kind and creative. And that's not a given in this industry. So I'm just so happy to be with that team and, you know, have those memories.
It's so funny because when you say, yeah, this is going to be my final show, that's the same thing I said about Cobra Kai in 2018.
But they said, kept going.
Yep, this is going to be my final show. Little did I know, 6 years later, I was going to be here. And at least as a recording right now, it's the number one show on Netflix in 83 different countries. Never saw that coming. I'm like, ooh, this looks like a fun little side project. It's this YouTube show about the Karate Kid characters, right? So that was going to be my quote unquote last show 6 years ago. And here I am still working on it. None of which is a complaint, but I can relate to how challenging it is to balance both, where you feel like you're just putting in so many hours and you're being called to two things simultaneously. And that can be very, very draining. It's an opportunity that, you know, I'm very, very grateful for, but it does come with its own challenges. One of them being, I want to put all my effort into Cobra Kai, and I want to put all my effort into the podcast and into my students and into the coaching program. And there's only so many hours in the day. Mm-hmm. So like you said, use your analogy. We're going to start to peel the layers of the onion a little bit deeper. Mm-hmm. So to steal from Elaine Bennis, one of my favorite quotes is, you yada yada the best part. Which is, I was nerding out in these forums about personal knowledge men and Obsidian, and now all of a sudden I'm getting paid for it. I'm like, hold on a second. How do you go from just randomly being on forums and nerding out on software to all of a sudden you're getting paid for it enough so that you're thinking, I don't know if I want to take my career opportunity. There's a big giant gap, even if it's a day, a week, a month, or a year, that's a huge gap. And I think that's where a lot of people are stuck, is number one, figuring out how could I provide value to others other than my specialization, but how do I bridge that gap? And you yada yada the best part. So let's go into that transition from this is just something I do in the background to now it's generating income.
Sure. I will share what worked for me. I'm sure there are some things that cannot be replicated because of time and place. There might be some underlying patterns that we can suss out of it.
Yeah, so, that's my job. You just tell the story and I help you identify the patterns.
All right, wonderful. Yeah, March 2020, we're working on that show Coyote and our amazing post-producers thinking ahead of the game. Let's get all of our footage so we can edit this remotely before anyone was even thinking that and before we were locked down. So we had the footage backed up before we even had permission to do so, but that allowed us to continue doing the show. So we bring that back. I'm actually in the same spot that I am right now, and I'm editing here, but we have a lot of time on our hands because of the pandemic and because of all that situation. So I would jump on to, okay, just to backtrack a little bit, I was always interested in really small atomic notes. And we are able to take these digital notes and kind of say, it's related to this note. And around that time, we could actually link. So there was a connection between two different notes. And if you think about how the brain is wired, it's all these connections and neurons. But now we could visibly see that with ideas. Whoa, how cool. So a new app came out, a new software application. It's called Obsidian. Same time, March 2020. I was quickly on the beta, and they opened up a community forum on the platform Discord, if anyone knows Discord. And so, you know, I think Discord initially was more for video game audience. So it's like really fast chat messages. And we're just talking about the application. What if it could do this? What if it could do that? And the developers would immediately provide an update. Like, now it does that. Now it does this. I'm like, whoa, this is cool. And I'm like, this does everything I wanted to, because now I can change file names and everything will still be linked. It will like auto update, auto percolate all the links. So this brain isn't just this static thing, but it's automatically updating all my thoughts. Whoa, how cool. So I noticed, because of my background, that if you just have a bunch of links, it's like a densely packed forest and you're walking from one link to the next of these notes. And it's very easy to get lost or overwhelmed. And so going against the trend of the time, I said, what we need is a map, a mapping note that has links to all the notes beneath it that make sense to us. And I initially did it to organize. But what happened was, and this is still 2020, this is like March into April. I'm like, whoa, because of the, we finally have made link notes and notes fast enough that it's not just organization anymore, it's ideation. I'm actually thinking better because of how quickly I can play around with this these texts and ideas in ways that I've never been able to digitally before. And that's what I started shouting from the rooftops. I'm like, you can organize notes and you can use these mapping notes to actually not just organize, but to ideate faster. And what I did was I shared a free kit, a starter kit of notes showing how you could do this. Okay, basically a forest of interrelated notes, and people could download that. And that just started conversations, even more conversations. They like that. What if it did this? What if it could do that? Explain this better, please. And so now we had the feedback loop. We had a flywheel going, and I was like, oh, cool. So now I'll respond to what they're saying and I will make it better. And then there was more interest. Oh, I guess I should start this newsletter thing. And that was around June. But the biggest leap that I did was I reached out to people in that community. I did DMs, direct messages. And I said, I know you just know me as that avatar, Nick Milo, but I'm going to do a private course. It'll be 6 weeks, 1 hour each week. And I'd love to just go through some of these principles that I think are really important. Would you be game? I reached out to around 20 people and around 10 said, sure. So we ended up doing the first beta cohort of Linking Your Thinking, the workshop. And that was great. It went well. That was June 2020.
And that was free or paid?
That was free. I was asking them for their time. But when you come out of that, I learned so much from them, but I really actually already had something really great there. So that's when the newsletter started. I was like, okay, now I have something here. I'm going to expand it. That's when YouTube started. And I just so happened to launch a series of 6 videos. And we filmed the whole thing. I filmed it with one of my friends from that first cohort, we became friends in that cohort, and Dan Lardy, and he's like, I think you have something here. I'd like to build it with you. So we did a series of 6 YouTube videos that was like, how to use Obsidian for beginners, scrapped it and re-recorded it. And then that has had over like 2.5 million views and continues to be some of the most watched Obsidian videos. That was in September. Then I had a few spicy posts on Twitter where I was like, progressive summarization, which is by my friend Tiago Forte, but at the time I didn't know him. I had a very adversarial post and I was like, progressive summarization must die. And I was like, we need progressive ideation. And it was like, we need to ideate, not just, you know, summarize other people's ideas. That was the big thing that caught fire as well. I didn't like that tone. That tone wasn't me. So I softened it from that point forward. But as far as starting a spark with everyone locked in their homes, we had a lot to talk about. So with all of this conversation happening in October, I launched the first paid cohort. I was like, let's get 12 people, 12 paying people. I think it was 350 for a 6-week program. And we ended up getting 55. And then that, I remember the first sale, and then I was like, okay, maybe we have something here. And then once we had 55, I was like, okay. I was like, this could be the start of something special. Then in January of 2021, we had 111 for the next cohort. I was like, okay, this is what I think it is. And so that's the story.
Wow. And once again, there's a whole series of layers underneath that. And I agree with you that on the surface, it would be very difficult to replicate. So if I'm listening right now and I'm thinking, all right, so what I want to do is I need to start by finding a forum for an app. And then when they start developing the app, I need to be on the beta team. And then I need to get in a Discord channel and I need to start DMing people, right? All of that probably you're not going to be easy to replicate. It's not to say that that couldn't be a path to take, but on the surface, probably not that easy to replicate. But there's a framework that I teach specifically in my branding class, but I talk more about just in the general sense of really designing your dream career and being able to pivot, where I break it down into 4 categories. When you identify that somebody has a problem, you have a solution to that problem, the process is conducive to a process that they're interested in going through, but most importantly, they're clear in the result that they give you, that's when you find alignment between your products and or services and your audience's needs, right? So I want to use that framework that I teach, and I want to break this down really, really quickly. The first of which is that you identified that people had a problem, which is, there's so much information and I've got all these notes and they're in these lockdown systems of Evernote or Notion or Trello or whatever it might be, right? So there's this problem. And on top of it, what they're realizing is that information is everywhere. It's nonstop. Basically, it's 24 hours a day, a fire hose of brand new content, articles, videos, like it just never ends. I used to make a joke probably about a decade ago where I said there's going to be a psychological condition someday known as Netflix queue anxiety, where it's, I have so many things in my Netflix queue I'm never going to watch, but now it's Netflix and it's Disney Plus and it's Hulu and it's YouTube watch lists. And there's just so many things that we never feel like we're going to catch up, and it literally causes anxiety. So the point is, you identify that there's a community of people that have this problem, right? And you started to say to yourself, I think I might have a solution to this. And the solution is, here's how I organize my notes and how I link my thinking. And here's how I'm kind of using this app and how I'm approaching it. So you were bringing a process, right? You were bridging problem to solution with a process that was conducive to what they were looking for. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, and this is the big transition that I learned about, that's the big realization for a lot of my students, especially for those that are interested in making this pivot beyond, I just want another job as a specialist doing this one thing and I want to do it again, more diversifying, is that people ultimately don't pay you for solutions, they pay you for results. And the result that I believe that you give more than anything else is not, now my notes are organized and now I find what I need. It's, holy crap, I'm combining ideas that were in disparate places, and those ideas are allowing me to create new ones and be more creative. That's the result that I believe people are paying you for. And that to me is very replicable. Maybe not your past specifically, but the fact that you found a community, they had a problem. Mm-hmm. You brought them a solution with a process that was fitting with the way that they were interested in getting to that solution. But really what people decided to pay you for was the results.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it follows that framework quite nicely. And I also think there are two ways to approach this, and we have to stay in tension with both of these ways. One is that top down, like knowing the framework and trying to architect it. And then the other is like the bottom up, but then still being open to randomness and enthusiasm and your own interests. We can't just be completely open to the interest. It's too diffuse and we'll be scatterbrained and we won't go anywhere. But if we're too architecting of it, then that like authenticity that people really, really need these days from other people, that vulnerability even will evaporate. So it's this balance between knowing that framework and using it because we need to, and then still though, making sure that you're able to be yourself and be really excited and enthusiastic about that thing. So I love it though. I love problem solution process result. That's good.
Yeah. And I also love the fact that, like you said, you really have to be authentic and kind of bringing yourself to it. Don't get me started on authenticity being a trend right now. Cause I'm, as you may have seen in the world of YouTube or online social media, like authenticity is the latest trend. As soon as authenticity is a trend, it's the opposite of what it's supposed to be. That's another conversation for another day as well. Yes. But what I want to dig into a little bit further is the nuances of how you were able to provide a process that grew your audience. And one of the things that we don't need to go too deep into the weeds because this isn't an online marketing podcast, but you had mentioned to me at one point in one of our previous conversations that essentially you provided like a free guide and overnight you like had an email list that exploded, which I'm still envious of to this day. I have yet to crack that code, but I know that you basically posted this in the right thing in the right place at the right time and boom, suddenly you've got a five-figure email list.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really surprising. So that was that first starter kit of notes, and it's gone through a lot of different iterations, but it's like, hey, here's free value. And when I first shared it, it was just on those forums. It wasn't on Discord. It was on Discourse, which is a platform that allows a bit more of a long form sort of posting environment, like a normal forum. And I was like, here it is. I wasn't collecting anything, just again, organic, enthusiastic sharing. But then once I start seeing everyone clicking on it, I was like, okay, now I need to start collecting this through an email landing form and all that stuff. So I can't even remember the initial name. It was something like the ICM kit, index categories and maps. And that eventually became the Lite kit, as in LYT, the linking your thinking kit. And today it's now Ideaverse or Ideaverse Pro, just to give it some branding. But every day, roughly, well, it's been pretty consistent with about 40 new email subscribers just to download that thing for the past 4 years. And it's really, a lot of those people, not a lot of them, but there's a good unsubscribe rate because of the type of community I'm in. They're do it yourself. So they don't want too much help from the outside world, but they're very interested. They want to do it themselves. They download this thing. But then my goal is to build the relationship with them. And then if they want more, they know where to go.
Yeah. And that's such a key part of this too. And again, I don't want to get into the weeds about, online email funnels versus social media versus paid ads. Like that's not what this conversation's about at all. But I stand by the fact that if you really want to build a relationship with people, and it's not just about conducting a transaction, where if you said, I want to build a business where I'm going to sell this Ideaverse kit for $9.99, all you have to do is maximize Facebook ads and you could probably build a business. Mm-hmm. You're more interested in actually building a relationship with people and helping them along their journey. There's no better platform to do that than email. Right. Yeah. So my business, as far as like the actual business that generates income, my business is the email list. I build a relationship via the podcast, or I used to build it more via social media. Now I'm allergic to social media and I don't want to have anything to do with it. But that's where the relationship is ultimately built via email. And I still stand by anybody that's listening, that's thinking that I do have some form of value that I can bring in my skills and my experience and my past and my unique perspective. I still say whatever the business model is, you want to build a relationship with people via email and boom, you are off to the races doing that. It's just the start of it. And like you said, with your kit, it's very transactional in nature. And ooh, you helped me solve this one problem. I'm going to download it and I'm going to immediately unsubscribe because nobody's going to help me. I'm going to do it by myself, right? I've certainly got a lot of those too, but you don't need 100% of the people on your email list to decide to pay you money. You need like 1% of them to decide that they're going to pay you money, and you can build a life off of that. right? That's mm-hmm. how I've done it with this coaching business.
My sincerest apologies for the interruption, but if you're a creative professional who spends long hours at your workstation, not only is the following promo not an interruption, but listening has the potential to change your life. Because working with a topo mat underneath you at a height-adjustable workstation is a game changer. Let's learn a little bit more from ErgoDriven co-founder and CEO Kit Perkins, creator of the topo mat.
The topo mat is the first anti-fatigue mat designed specifically for standing desks. The real benefit of a standing desk is movement. We found bringing in this cushioned terrain under your feet, your brain just subconsciously engages and you wander around and you get that movement at the standing desk that you need without even having to think about it at all.
People will come to me at an event or a panel and they'll say, I got the topo mat because of you. Even when they had a mat, once they used this one, it was a total game changer.
We've just heard time and time again that with topo, we've kind of hit the sweet spot, that it's the right premium quality materials and a right shape that people are actually getting benefit out of this stuff.
You spend more time here than anywhere if you do creative work the way that I do. So I would rather be driving around in a Ferrari than a Ford Pinto. And I feel like this is the Ferrari of the standing mat.
One of the things you don't realize is that at a standing desk, your main interface to the world, your body's main interface to the world is the ground. If you're going to invest in anything at that Ferrari level, it should be what you're standing on.
Well, my goal is that for anybody that is a creative professional like myself that's stuck in front of a computer for inordinate amounts of time of their waking life, they're doing it standing on a topo mat. So you and I, my friend, one edit station at a time are going to change the world.
I like it. That's a utopian vision I can get on board with.
If you're a creative professional looking for a simple and affordable way to stay active, energetic, and focused while spending long hours at your height adjustable workstation, I can't stress enough how important it is to have the right mat underneath you, which is why I continue to share the topo mat as my number one product recommendation. To learn more about the topo mat and purchase yours, visit optimizeyourself.me/topo. That's T-O-P-O.
Mm-hmm. So having said all that, I want to make a little bit of a transition. It's still somewhat related, but I want to talk more about what it is that you actually do. Now that we have a sense of how you made this career pivot doing this, I want to talk about what it is you actually do. Because one of the things that I absolutely love learning more about is understanding the process of creativity. And I will refer people to a few other related podcasts that we have. You'll see what I'm doing is I'm linking their listening. I might have to trademark that. So I'm linking their listening, and that I have a couple of past podcasts with Scott Young, who I'm assuming you probably at least heard of, is probably in your general ecosphere. We talked about his first book, Ultra Learning, his second one, How to Learn or How to Master Anything, to learn more about how we can really immerse ourselves, knowing that you can provide the practical tools to learn and gather information quickly. But there's another podcast that I did that I think is more relevant to where I want to go. And that's a podcast with Joey Caffone, who wrote the book, The Laws of Creativity. If you're not familiar with Joey, I think you and Joey would be a really, really good connection to make. And I would facilitate it for you if you like. He wrote, it's not a book, it's more of like a Bible. And you can see that I've spent a lot of time with it. It's literally called The Laws of Creativity. And in what must be 300 to 400 pages of just brilliant ideas, the one thing that I took away more than anything was understanding that creativity is not creation, it's combination. Mm. So the idea is there, and that it's all about combining ideas. That's where, for me, the struggle becomes real. Because I'm probably going to be the perfect student for you, because I have so many ideas in so many different notes. And then I look at everything I have and like, I don't know what to do with this. I've got a bookmark and Apple Notes to this article. And I've got all these coaching sessions that I've got in Obsidian, but oh crap, I've got all this stuff that's in Evernote. And when I find that those things are organized and they're linked in just the right way, all of a sudden it's like the combination of these things, this is what's going to push me to create this new workshop or write this newsletter. Or I didn't even think that I could talk to this podcast guest about this topic, and the intersection of the topic and the guest, that brought out a really unique conversation, right?
Exactly.
So I want to talk more about your approach to what creativity really is. And I want to look at it through three lenses, and you can break down as little or as much as you want of these three lenses: divergence, convergence, and emergence.
Wonderful. This is going to be fun talking about all these aspects of creativity. I do know Joey. I haven't talked to him in a while, but yeah, had him on one of our Linking Your Thinking conferences when his book was.
Oh, great. So then you and I, we clearly know a lot of the same people.
Yeah. And amazing people. So, like you said earlier, I do help people with organization. That's like step one. It's like, get your thoughts in order so that, like, there's a so that once you get your thoughts in order, then you'll want to be expressive. You'll be like, oh, okay, now I can actualize myself in whatever way that is. So organization bleeds into ideation. And that's where, that's my happy place. That's where I think I have the most value to give others. And ideation can't help but express ourselves, lead to joy, and lead to deeply meaningful living. So that's, I think, at the heart of what I do. Now, there's a third part of that Venn diagram. Organization, ideation. I'll say below that is sort of like production, the getting things done aspect. I touch upon that, but not as much as many. In fact, I'm sort of anti-productivity that way. I kind of believe that not all those who wander are lost, to quote Tolkien. And so in the wandering, we can create real value if we let ourselves do so. So that ties into divergence. Wandering is all about divergent energy. And let's talk about how that relates to our notes. We came from a world that told us to use folders. No one was saying use folders. We just had no other choice. It's like, hey, we have file folders, 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 more folders upon folders. And all this is a siloing and an architecture that is a place where good ideas go to die, essentially, because they get suffocated. You have an idea. It's on the tip of your mind. And you have to ask the question, where should I put this idea? That's the wrong question to be asking. First, get it down. And once you have it down, you can ask all sorts of healthier, more creative questions in a linked note environment, such as, what does this relate to? What does it remind me of? Why is it important? And as you're typing, you're linking. As you're linking, you're thinking. As you're thinking, you're writing. It's this beautiful place to be in. So at any point, I can open a brand new note. It can be a blank page. And I'll just throw stuff in there, raw material, words, ideas. So oftentimes they're just keywords. I'm like, I know this is a cool keyword, like laws of creativity. I don't know how I'm going to use laws of creativity, but just the book, it's like this object. And I know, like, I want to kind of orbit some other thoughts around it. Well, I'll just put it into a note, make it a bullet or something. And think about, like, when you organize your room or the kitchen, like, things go in certain sections. Well, in a note, we can actually, once we start gathering and collecting whatever the bits of ideas and interests that we have, all we do is we gather them into a single place. And then the magic happens as we start to cluster them. So we could kind of consider this a form of convergence. We're clustering different ideas together. And this is where the magic happens. It's really hard to talk about this out loud without the visuals, Zach, but it's like when you start to cluster ideas in an environment that is as fluid almost as water. Like, this isn't our grandparents' Microsoft Word. This is, or I should say our previous lives' Microsoft Word.
You just made me feel really old with that.
Well, I mean, like, I know. Why did I say that? Because we all, like, you and I, we use Microsoft Word.
Yeah, but now, no, I totally understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. And now it's all these ideas, it's really hard to say, but we can play around with them visibly so much faster, almost like shuffling cards on a table, on a desk. But as we cluster them together, something magical happens. And that is, we ask even better questions. Does this one go above that one? How is this one related to that one? Are they saying the same thing? Or is this one already saying too much and I need to split it into some other points? And so you can think of it as maybe fast outlining if you want, but ultimately it's this ideation chamber, like this high pressure. I think of it as like the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland, colliding, smashing atoms together. But we're doing that with the ideas symbolized by text and a simple note. And as we do that, that's where we get into the emergence. We are generating newness that wasn't there before by combining and recombining and just having the sparks happen between different ideas. So that is what I try to, we get the organization done, but what I really want people to do is recognize they have an entirely brand new thinking tool. at their fingertips. It's free. It wasn't here before 2020. It's here now. And if you know how to use it, it will supercharge your mind. It will supercharge your creativity. And that's what I want to get more people to feel, because once they feel it, not just know like, oh, this wacky guy, Nick Milo, he's talking about this. But once you feel it, then people are like, whoa, it's an aha moment that they never forget.
Yeah. And I've had that experience more than once. I initially found Obsidian because of you. And I can't remember if you were the one that recommended it to me directly, because we were talking about this process at the time. It was maybe about a year ago. It was either that, or I literally just found you by doing a search for Obsidian and you showed up on YouTube, because mm-hmm. you're literally the Obsidian guy. So I don't remember how it was, but I remember thinking initially like, No, I feel pretty good about my ecosystem, right? I was using Evernote and I was using Trello, and at least in certain ecosystems similar to you, at one point I was the Trello guy, right? You went on LinkedIn Learning and I had all the Trello courses, both for just general training, also for how you specifically do a creative process like a TV or a documentary workflow. So I was kind of in that world of being associated
to it. I used that. I used Trello post-production one.
So I remember what it was like being associated with a very specific tool, and that never felt right to me, because I always like to teach the systems and the ideas and be able to apply them to any tool. But I do remember what it was like to be associated with a specific tool. And when I found you as the Obsidian guy, I'm watching the videos, I'm like, no, I don't know, I've got my workflow here. But then I started to understand not just, oh, this is good at organizing, or it uses tags versus labels, et cetera, et cetera. The aha moment for me was the ideation phase. It wasn't this is better at organizing than Evernote. It was it's connecting ideas that I never would have connected otherwise. I would have had to consciously open this note in a window, this note in a window, this note in a window. But then even with my very rudimentary knowledge still to this day of how to use Obsidian, it's like, oh my God, I never thought to connect this article that I read 3 years ago about work-life balance in Hollywood with this article about X, Y, or Z, or whatever it might have been. And a lot of the newsletters that I was writing for the email newsletter came from that process. And all of a sudden I'm thinking, this is way easier than it used to be. Like I could spit out a 1500 word newsletter in an hour or two. Whereas before it was always, all right, I'm staring at the blank page and I got to come up with an idea. And what am I going to write about? And now is you just enter a tag or a keyword and boom, you can literally have a visual map of these different connections. Yeah. So I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, because this is a very, very weedy and very technical program. But as far as my knowledge of it, I kind of feel like you introduced me to a Ferrari and right now I'm driving it up and down my driveway. Mm-hmm. There are so many things that I can do with this vehicle that I haven't learned how to do yet. And I want to, I'm going to dig more into that with you offline. And I definitely want to get into more of your courses because now is the time for me to figure all this out, because I'm more interested in doing more in-depth writing, possibly writing a book, but I want to look at it more from, without having the visual references, I want to step back and assume that I'm somebody that's in the very early creative phase, whether I'm writing a script, whether I want to make a film, wherever I'm the person that's generating the content that's going to create it, right? Mm-hmm. So the divergence process for most people at best is I've got a bunch of tabs open in Google, or I've got a bunch of Evernotes, or I've got a bunch of things that are bookmarked in Apple Notes, whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. Right. I want to kind of talk. And again, I don't want to go too deep into the nuances or talking about organizing, because that's not really what this is about. But I at least want to give a picture of how we go from information overload. I have no idea how to manage all this. So there's some semblance of organization. I want to look at the simplest steps that get to the collision of the ideas. And oh, my God, this is what my film is about, or this is my character's motivation, or this is what I want my YouTube channel's message to be. So let's just start from I am bombarded with way too much crap. I have so many podcasts to listen to. I have 27 tabs open in Google Chrome right now. I've got all these online courses that I paid for, haven't even logged in. Start me with just super, super bare bones basics. How do I start to feel 5% less overwhelmed by the amount of information available to me?
Sure. Number one, it's mindset before anything technical. So it's like, yes, there is the fire hose of information. And that fire hose isn't getting any weaker. So we just have to come to the realization to put the fire hose down and be at peace with that. So oftentimes when we're doing exercises in Obsidian or whatever the note app somebody is using, it's like, first thing we're going to do, what's the only rule? No internet, Like, I know we're on the internet now, but we're not going on search engines, no AI, no Wikipedia, because then we can tap back into that thing that never has any time, which is our own thoughts. So that's number one. It's just mindset. If we do that initially, okay. Now, technically, if there's a lot of overwhelm with tabs, here's a simple exercise that you can try. So, I mean, it's so simple, but if you do it, you might enjoy it. Open a new note, look at those tabs, and just one by one, copy the URL for a tab, put it into the note as a bullet, hit enter, you know, create a new bullet, and then copy and paste the next URL. And each time you close the tab. So instead of all these tabs in your internet browser that are always open to you as a distraction, you now have this note, give it a name like tabs that I had open. And you now have places where you can access those URLs and you can be very confident. You can go back to that note anytime to open those tabs again. And you can structure them, you can indent, you can say these are about, you know, this stuff and this is about that stuff. Great. All right, we're already doing the sorting, the sense making, the organizing. But just a simple activity like that will provide immediate relief and maybe nudge you into what's possible with making notes.
I know that beyond just the lack of organization, I hear this from my students all the time, and even I have some of it. It's this sense of guilt, right? It's, well, I said I was going to read this and the tab is there. So for me, yes, I'm moving the link somewhere else, but now all of a sudden I have this one note with 28 different links to articles. Oh my God, when am I going to find the time to get through all of these? Right. So what I really want to point out that I think is so important, and I'm glad you said it this way, it always starts with a mindset. All right. So there's a quote that you gave that I just kind of want to use to cap off. I like this, the quote of you need to be willing to put the fire hose down. But I think this is another one in this overload of information age that people need to hear. So I'm quoting you directly. We don't need more knowledge every second. Instead, we need to get better at developing the knowledge that we already have. And this is so hard for me personally, and it's so hard for other people. There's always this barrier of, I'm not ready yet. I don't know enough, right? And that can sometimes be used as not just a way to procrastinate, but to really stop yourself. Well, I don't know if I could create a YouTube channel about this. Let me gather more information first. Or I couldn't start a newsletter talking about work-life balance in Hollywood. Who am I to think that I can do that? I need to gather more information first. Mm-hmm. So how do we give ourselves permission to put the fire hose down? Because even to this day, I still give myself the excuse, well, I don't know enough to do this yet. And it's like, dude, you got enough information at your fingertips, just freaking do it. So how do you give yourself permission to put the fire hose down?
Honestly, I learned it as deeply, like we can intellectually learn this a million times, doesn't matter. But the one that really like punctured to my core, I just so happened to go to a New York Broadway play with a friend randomly. And it was a play that I had no interest in. It's called Pippin. It's not like the most exciting. No one's like, oh yeah, let's go see Pippin. But it's about this story of a young guy and he's trying on a bunch of different career paths. Like his dad's the king. So he's like, hey, let's go, let's fight in wars and rape and pillage. He's like, I don't want to rape and pillage though. So then he's trying out something else and he's trying out that. And someone at some point, and at this time in my life, I was not good at remembering quotes or information. That's probably why I wanted to take so many notes. But this one thing was said to him. He's like, the only thing to be sure of is that there's nothing to be sure of. And I just started repeating that for the rest of the play, that one quote. I went home and I also was looking at people who were extremely prolific in their life. At that same time, Pablo Picasso was on the top of my mind. Picasso is somebody who averaged one painting or drawing or sculpture a day, like one piece of work a day for his life. What? Like, that's incredible. So I combine that idea of prolificness and the only thing to be sure of is that there's nothing to be sure of. I was like, nobody knows diddly. Like, nobody knows anything. Who are they? They can't judge me. They don't know anything either. So how about I just create as much as I want to create, as fast as I can create, and let history sort it out. Just let the paramedics sort it out, so to speak. Like, I'm just going to do my thing. And that was the time it really punctured me deeply. I was like, no, there's nothing to be sure of. So that means no one can judge me. They can't be sure that my writing or my ideas are poor because they're just going off of whatever they are not sure of. So yeah, everything unlocked at that point. As far as, it doesn't mean I don't ever have bouts of imposter syndrome. It also doesn't mean that I don't get caught over consuming. Oh my goodness. But at least there are some tools and strategies to get beyond that. But mindset wise, yeah, that's just one thing to be sure of, is that there's nothing to be sure of. So just go ahead and do your thing.
All right. So I love that. Now I want to peel the layer again, because you can take anybody in whatever circumstances in their life, and you can take multiple people, a whole room of people that are watching Pippin with you. My guess is the vast majority of them don't remember that quote and it didn't resonate with them at all. What was it specifically about what you were struggling with or what was going on in your life that made that one quote echo over and over and over? Because others wouldn't even remember it was said. And for you, it's been a guiding principle for your entire life in building a business.
Well, I guess I felt at that time that I wanted to express some ideas. At that time, it was actually more about willpower. And I felt like Johannes Kepler from an old Cosmos episode, Carl Sagan talks about this guy who was dead set on believing in Plato's model of the universe. And so he's trying to figure out why Mars doesn't work like the other planets in their rotation. And it turns out that it looked like Mars is orbiting one direction, and then for little part of the year, it goes backwards. They call it retrograde. And then it'll start spinning its normal direction again. And long story short, Kepler had to abandon his entire faith to destroy that model and recognize that there was a different model. So he had to get rid of his complete faith in Platonic models and replace it with something that was turned out to be true, which is elliptical orbits of planets and bodies. So he had to completely smash his limiting beliefs. And why that resonated with me so much is because the quote from Pippin is because I was holding on to the limiting beliefs that we all have deep down inside: fear of rejection, imposter syndrome. And the way that it manifested for me was through perfectionism. Oh, it's not ready yet. Oh, I can make this better before I share it. And that's always a losing proposition, but especially in our digital age, you are penalized by not sharing. And everyone who is sharing their crappy first drafts, they're all being rewarded for it because they get feedback. And then that starts a beautiful flywheel effect. So it just, everything is going against the people who don't share. And if you're someone who, if you're listening to this, we want your voice out there. We want you to be giving whatever your value is. And if you're not doing it, then we'll have a bunch of other people who maybe shouldn't be, who are opening their mouth and saying things that, well, are bringing down the level of discourse, and we need to bring it up. So yeah, all those things, I think that's why it resonated so much to me, because I was dealing with all those inner beliefs that needed to be shattered.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that I asked that, and you gave me exactly the answer that I was looking for, was that this entire journey goes so much deeper than I've found this new program. I'm a beta tester. I'm going to provide some skills, right? To go from, I think I might put together a free guide, to I'm going to ask people money to be in my cohort, to now this is what I do for a living. You have to confront all of the limiting beliefs about yourself, which again is so much more about mindset than it is about the tech or it is about skills or abilities. And this quote resonated with you because you had the mindset, the script in your head was, I'm not ready. This needs to be perfect first. And had you decided this, you know, that this index of starter files for Obsidian isn't good enough yet, you'd probably still be trying to struggle figuring out, well, is there any jobs for me as an assistant editor? Because that's what I do for a living. But you decided this crosses the threshold of what I would call good enough, right? The challenge here, and I don't want to get too deep into this because I have many feelings about social media and content creation because it's changed radically in the last 10 years. But I would argue that one of the problems is there's way too many people that are giving way too much information that's complete and total garbage. And they could use a little bit of a filter where they maybe need to think that maybe they need to maybe not be sure about everything, but be a little bit more sure about what they're doing. So how would you advise, and this is partially intertwined with the organizing information, but also the person that decides they may want to create it, how do you overcome the idea of, well, everybody's talking about this and there's already too much information, and it's not even whether or not my information is good enough. Am I sure? Am I not sure? It's what's the point? Like, if somebody's listening saying, I thought that I knew a lot about Obsidian, I was starting to think of the idea of pursuing that as a path, but well, Nick blew it for me because Nick is already teaching Obsidian. So how would you confront that kind of a limiting belief, knowing there's so much content and so many people now doing what you're doing?
Yeah, it always feels like, oh, if I just started this 5 years earlier, I'd be in such a better position. The one that I think resonates most with me and that I've been sharing with others is that we just can't base success off of extrinsic goals that we can't control. We have to first know that no matter what, even if only my mom reads this, I'm still going to be happy with the outcome of creating this piece of work in whatever form it is. We might be talking like it might be a tweet or whatever you want to call it, a post, an email, a conversation in the office with a colleague about something you're interested in whatever form your expression, your form of communication, whatever form it takes. You just have to be intrinsically motivated to do that. And that expression is the result. And if you're happy with the expression, that's enough. Now, we still need to be practical and figure out the world. So you can have extrinsic goals, but it's very important that that the tail doesn't start wagging the dog. Because if you're only focused on the external stuff, it's like, I must make sure this gets 10 likes, or I must make sure I get, you know, something from it. That's great. And I have those goals. But if they are not met, then I can still look at, you know, maybe my latest YouTube video and be like, you know what? I like that I made that. I can stand by it. I'm proud of it. So that makes me feel good. And so, yeah, I think it really just is about delineating and being clear that there are extrinsic goals and there are intrinsic goals. We need both. And if you only have the outer ones, that's when you're going to really get in a world of hurt.
Yeah. So I agree with all that. And I want to bring it back to this conversation of divergence, convergence, and emergence. And it's less about the actual process and more about how it's us being able to do it for ourselves. So if we're talking about divergence, I love where you talked about sometimes the work is done in the wandering, right? When you're wandering, you're not necessarily lost. And if it comes to the creation process, whether it's creating content online, building a business, writing a script, there is this part where you just kind of have to throw shit against the wall. What sticks? What doesn't stick? You got to write the bad words to get to the good words, right? Mm-hmm. And in a way, you'd kind of giving yourself permission to, well, I'm going to put this stuff out there. I'm still not an expert on Obsidian, but I feel like I'm solving the specific problem for people. But one of the things when it starts to come to the convergence, and it's not just the convergence of notes in Evernote or Obsidian or anything else, but the convergence of all the things that you were learning about how you were going to take the way you've diversified yourself and thus learned to specialize it, right? One of the things you mentioned earlier was this idea of wanting to authentically do it. And there was this one video where you were way too inflammatory. And you decided, I want to take that out, right? My guess is that I haven't seen the video, but whatever the approach was or the tone or the inflammatory nature, I bet you were probably rewarded by the algorithm for that. And if you had let the tail wag the dog, you would have said, this is what I need to do with my YouTube channel. I need to talk about Evernote and shit, right? If you had a tab, if you had a thumbnail that said Evernote is garbage, you'd probably have your likes and you know, all of your subscribers skyrocket. But you decided that from the divergence to the convergence process, that's a value that I don't hold. The value that I hold is authenticity. So you weren't letting the tail wag the dog. And right now the tail that's wagging everybody is the algorithm or the algorithms, right? And I've always been such a big proponent of, I don't want the algorithm to tell me what I need to make, and I'm not here to please the algorithm. Now, financially, that's probably hurt me significantly, but I can sleep at night, at least mostly. I can sleep at night for these reasons. I have my other challenges with sleeping at night, but they have nothing to do with the algorithm or the business, right?
Yeah.
So to me, that's part of going from divergence to convergence and figuring out who we are and how we provide value, right? So that's kind of high up in the clouds. Now I want to take this idea of convergence a little bit down, not too much into the weeds, but maybe just on ground level, where I have my ideas somewhat kind of sort of gathered. I've got a bunch of notes. I've got a bunch of ideas. I've got clippings, whatever it might be. without going into all the tags and tips and tricks and maps and everything else, just kind of give me a general concept or mindset for how do I start to get these ideas together in the same place to converge so that it then sparks the ideation.
Yeah, totally. I love this. And I have simple answers. One, let's say you have a bunch of notes, throw all those notes into a single note. Like when I say throw all the notes in there, we're throwing links to those other notes. Great. Now we've cut down on the cognitive burden. We can look at all that stuff in a single spot. Typically, then I'll open up a new note. Let's pretend this is a 750 word article. Okay, now I can open up a new note. Those are all my reference pieces. They're living on their own. They're doing their own thing. But I'm just going to open up this note and start typing it with a single consistent through line. Because one of the things, when you have a bunch of these atomic notes, some of your listeners, but probably not too many, might be familiar with the term Zettelkasten, which is German for slip box. And it's a long story short, it's when you have a bunch of index cards, like thousands of them. You can't fit much on an index card. And so you can save information and then later on write from these index cards. And whiffs of a Zettelkasten is about the best insult I've ever heard for writing that is like piecemeal from these different index cards. We don't want that. So I'll have all my index cards, my digital ones, over in one single note that I can click on, I can open up, I can look at, but then I'm just writing over in this other note. Okay, now the simple stuff. Let's imagine I have something. The key is to move to the medium. Move to the medium. Okay, I did my work in Obsidian. More than likely, that's not where I'm sharing it. So let's remember there's a real step here of moving that content to the medium. Maybe it's as a newsletter. Well, I have to open up, in my case, ConvertKit. I have to go in there. It's just not a copy and paste either, because in that container, in that rectangle of an email post, it looks different than it did in Obsidian. There's a dangling line. Well, I better fix that one. There's this and that. And all those things, the form of the medium helps, it shapes the message in minor ways sometimes, but in other ways, more profoundly. So move to the medium. And if you don't know what your medium is, you always have one at your fingertips. That's called send to self. Open up an email, copy and paste whatever you have in your note app of your choice, and then edit it to your heart's content in the email before sending it to yourself. Anyone can do that anytime to practice getting over perfectionism and practice just moving through that process of adding ideas, relating ideas, communicating ideas. That's all we're doing here. But people get stuck with the communicating. You can communicate just to yourself. It's a practice. We just have to get comfortable with what it is to actually move to a medium and then express it, communicate it. And we can do that by just sending to self.
I have spent almost 10 years now raving about how much I love my Topomat, and I have finally discovered what I now consider the Topomat of desk chairs, the Core 360. The Core 360, spelled Q-O-R, is designed to keep me constantly moving while seated in an upright and balanced position. To learn more about how it works, let's hear from Core 360 founder, Dr. Turner Osler, about why he created the Core 360 active sitting chair.
When you sit badly for many hours a day. And that's really what the problem is. It's very hard to make yourself get up and do jumping jacks every half hour. But if you just swap to a chair that requires you to be muscularly engaged in order not to fall off, it's an easy bar to clear.
For the procrastinators out there who hear all of the statistics and know how bad sitting is and it's the new smoking and they're thinking, that's something I'll worry about in a few decades, you're gonna feel the effects of having more energy at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 4 o'clock in the afternoon that day.
That's the whole point. Your core muscles will be stronger. You'll have less back pain. All of this will make you more available for the rest of the pursuits of your life, your kids, your hobbies, your whatever.
For those of us who need to practically live in front of computers to do our best creative work, the Core 360 is going to level up your game. Keep your body moving and keep the creativity flowing. To learn more and purchase what I consider to be the Topomat of desk chairs, please go to optimizeyourself.me/core360. That's optimizeyourself.me/QOR360.
It's so funny how similar the two of us are, and I didn't even realize it, but I'm exactly the same way, where now, largely because of you, I write everything in Obsidian, and one of the things I like about it, it's not connected to the internet. I'm stuck in a closed system where my ideas are based on whatever's in these notes, and I'm not even at the point yet where I'm smart enough to like have one note with all the notes within it, but I create I do the linking between the notes, and I always create like a table of contents for stuff, right. So I have some semblance of what I'm working with, but for me, it's the same thing where you can copy paste it, but then you look at it and you're like, ah, crap, I can't just hit the send button because now this paragraph is slightly different size than it was before and it doesn't feel like it's skimmable, or this one line isn't formatted correctly. So I've actually found a hack where I literally will make the window size in Obsidian. You can create multiple windows within windows so you can have your notes next to notes, which I love. Mm-hmm. But I found it's not really a hack. I'm sure that you're way more of a hacker than I am. But I have the window size be exactly the same width, so it has the same number of letters as it does my email program. Nice. So now when I copy paste it, it's not, oh wait, this is now 7 lines instead of 4, and I get the feel for it. But yes, understanding how the other person is going to consume that information is largely important, so you can put yourself in their shoes. But I want to zoom into a place that's kind of in between those two things.
Okay.
Because I think, at least for me, this is largely where the ideation phase happens, or as you says, the emergent phase, if we're talking about divergence to convergence to emergence. At least for me, I find the emergence phase largely happens by accident when I'm trying to converge my ideas. So I want to talk, again, not in the weeds of here all the fancy features of Obsidian, but where you could do this with just about any note-taking program or even literal index cards all over the floor, right? Mm-hmm. So if we go back to the divergence, I've got 28 open tabs in Chrome. We've taken those 28 tabs, we've copy-pasted the URLs into one note and whatever that note-taking app is, or we have a pile of index cards. But that's not really usable information yet because it's a bunch of http://. And I have a lot of notes in Obsidian that are still just the link to the note with no context whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So if we want to go from that to being ready for the medium that's going to go out there, what's the simplest way to say I've got all these URLs and is it a matter of I want to put them in different, and I know you don't want folders, but different folders, different tags, different categories. If I wanted to spend half an hour and I've got 28 URLs posted in bullet points in a single note, mm-hmm. if I want to converge those ideas, at least for me, that process is where the emergence of creativity happens. Mm-hmm. So what's a simple way to approach? I've got a bunch of this information and it's organized, but organizing it doesn't help the ideation or the creative process.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So two terms that may or may not, I might not get these accurate, but I'm going to talk about density and pressure. So density is going to have all these index cards or ideas as tightly packed as humanly possible, all the links, whatever. That is what is at the core of the linking your thinking ideas, is just you got to pack in all these ideas as tightly as possible. And that's where the emergence happens, because your mind will just be like, well, this is related to that. That goes here. This, now that makes me think this. That's where, in my mind, that's where the emergence, like something from nothing happens there. And then it can kind of converge out into a formalized work. Like all that stuff converges into something. So that's kind of just how I would think about it. And so we talk about density. And then the other part is pressure. If you know you have an output in mind, oh, I got my weekly newsletter, I got to get that out. That's the pressure to know what to conform to. So if you don't have the pressure and you have the density, like, okay, I have all these ideas, they're tightly packed, but why can't I do anything with it? Well, do you know what you are trying to do? Like, do you know what the outcome looks like? Kind of. So, if you have the outcome without the density of ideas, then it's hard to get there too. That's the blank page that you were talking about earlier. So I would just say that's just kind of the theory and all. But now let's go back to the density. We have all these URLs or linked notes and ideas, and they're tightly packed. And then, so your question here was more about how to...
Essentially, let's continue with this analogy, right? Where mm-hmm. we put the fire hose down. We've decided I can only use the 27 tabs I have open in Chrome. I'm not allowed to go any further down the rabbit hole, right? Mm-hmm. I copy paste the URLs into a single note. I've got a bunch of bullet points. And again, this is not about the tech. This is about the metaphor of the creative process, right? So I have all these URLs and I know that I have to, it doesn't matter if it's, I have to write an email newsletter. I need to create a YouTube video. I want to write a short film script, whatever it might be. What I'm trying to figure out is the simplest step in between where should I take all those and should I categorize them as this is about nutrition. This is about fitness. Should it be tags that are, it's kind of the basic understanding of the convergence of these is what leads to the emergence of, I never thought bullet point 7 and 14 had anything to do with each other, but holy crap, this is the story of my film, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Great. So don't even have to touch folders. Don't even have to touch tags or any of that. All we need is this simple note with these little bullets and stuff. And each bullet is a line. And so what I implore everybody to get really good at is just being able to move lines up and down, because that's how, when you're clustering ideas together that are on a single line, you can cluster related ideas together. And then you can hit a bunch of spaces and you'll have like a group of five bullets here. And then you'll have a group beneath that of like two bullets. And then you have this big unsorted group of bullets at the very bottom. Great. Now we're organizing, but we're doing it in like this really fluid way. It doesn't require folders or anything. It just requires actual physical space on a screen. It's like we're mapping with text in a vertical plane. And then I probably would add categories, like you said, like as a header. So I'd give a header and say, these ones are about social dynamics. These ones are about productivity, whatever these headers are. And I'm sense making as I'm working, and all the organization is happening in a single note. And then from that tightening and clustering, it's going to most likely spur off and generate new ideas. That's where the creative part, it's just so hard to talk about, but you'll say, oh, these two ideas together makes my brain come alive and makes me think this. And you're like, yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing I have to say about all this stuff. And so that's the spark that generates, you know, your next gush of energy. But that's the hardest part to say, but it happens by the clustering, by tightly packing related ideas together. And you can do all that just in a very simple note. Move bullets around, make spaces between groups of bullets, give each of those clusters a heading. At some part in this process of natural organization, which feels kind of nice, you're probably going to have the ideation just hit you. And you're like, okay, I'm going to go in this direction. And then you're off to the races.
Yeah. And I've had that happen many times where it's, for me, it's absolute drudgery to have to go through, here's the notes that I've clipped or organized. Why did I write this thing again? Or why was this highlighted? But you just kind of force yourself through the process. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, this is the thing. Holy crap. And then 2 hours later, where did these 1500 words come from? Right. So for me, that the just learning how to do this, like I said, I'm driving the Ferrari around my driveway right now. Like I've got so many other things that I can learn about this process, but just knowing enough, just barely enough to create a bullet, put them all in a similar place, link notes, the emergence of so many different ideas have come for me that have led to not just I'm going to push myself to write this, but I feel pulled or called to write about this idea. And the reason that I bring this up is kind of the two areas where I want to leave this conversation. The first of which is we're talking a lot about the creative process to create external content. But where we started was this idea of recreating ourselves and retelling our stories. And what I talk so much about in the program, especially when it comes to managing career pivots, is that it's not that you're starting over. It's that you need to find the intersection of all of the areas where you already have skills, abilities, knowledge, or values you can bring to others. So the example that I always give, just to kind of show that the power of this intersection, is that if we're talking about my experience in the world of Hollywood film and television editing, I work at a pretty high level. I mean, I'm working on Cobra Kai, which is, you know, number one show in 83 countries as we talk, but I'm not the best film editor in the world. I haven't won Emmys. I haven't won Oscars, but I'm working at a pretty high level and I consider myself a professional at this point. I'm past the point of, I can't believe they're paying me to do this. Do they realize I don't know what the hell I'm doing? That was the first 15 years of my career. I've settled into, I guess I'm a professional at this point, right? But I'm not the best in the world. Then we take this other area that we talked about, which is me as an American Ninja Warrior. Compared to other American Ninja Warriors and even novices, I suck. I'm pretty much not good at the sport. And I've learned after 6 years that I'm probably not the best fit for it. And I always kind of come into the group and it's kind of like I'm Rudy. It's like, good for you, kid. Good job. We're going to get you in for one play. But nobody's ever going to think, yeah, I'm legitimately going to compete with them, right? Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about the power of intersections, if you take my level of experience as a film and television editor and my level of experience as an American Ninja Warrior and all of the skills therein, how many people do you know, and you know a lot of people like I do, that are as good as I am at film editing that are better than me in American Ninja Warrior?
I know zero.
Right? That's the power of intersection. And mm-hmm. that's where, if you're using this process to find the intersections and the overlap, or if we're talking about creativity, the combination of different ideas, that's why I think personal knowledge management is such a vital meta skill that people have to develop. It's not just about, I want to be able to write a newsletter easier, I want to create more YouTube content, or I need to write shorts. It's great for all of that. But I think understanding this process is also really good for us better understanding ourselves and the value that we can provide to the world.
100%. I think you've made a really nice connection. I know there are a lot of puns with the linking, you're thinking the connections, but that's a really great one with your thoughts there about like looking at yourself and saying, you know, what's your stack of skills? What are the overlaps that we never give ourselves credit for? You know, that we don't think are important. That's this thing is like they sneak up on you because to you they're of maybe a little normal or maybe just not obvious to yourself, but from someone else. You know, I remember that show I worked on when I started, it was the Coyote. So it was almost second to last show I worked on. I guess there's another pandemic show in there, but, and I was showing like in the office while we're still in the office, the proto version of what now is in Obsidian. And everyone's like, well, one assistant editor, you know how they nerd out. They're like, oh man, this is amazing. And then that became a conversation and it just kind of like picked up momentum. So like little seeds were being planted without intention when John, that assistant editor, was telling me like how much he loved that himself. And I was like, okay, that's cool. It's like, yeah, all right. So, but that only happened just by having the screen open and sharing a little bit. So that's a thing. And you put that into wherever, like make a note and just like, what are my potential skills or that might be interesting, and be super easy on yourself and throw in like the bad example section, like have a section just called bad examples. So you can throw in the stuff that's like, I guess I can cook eggs. Okay. You know, like just start easy. So you don't have to have such a high bar for yourself. I think if we can do that, be easy on ourselves, we might kind of discover, oh, you know, like that thing that I do, like I do like wearing barefoot style shoes. That might not lead to anything, but I'll put it on the list for now. Stuff like that. I really like what you're saying there.
Yeah. And it may not be the direction that I'm going next, but what really allowed me to be able to build the business that I have now was the unique intersections of, I have a lot of experience in the film and television industry. I've made significant career pivots where I don't just have one track where I kind of climb from the bottom rung of the ladder to the top. I'm in completely different sectors, whether it's in advertising, marketing, trailers, documentaries, featurettes. You know, I've done independent features. I've done TV. I've done multiple genres where you can look at the resume and say, this is all over the place. You make no sense, right? There's actually value in understanding how to help people be able to navigate that. But then somebody that understands time management, productivity, career development, there are a lot of other business coaches out there that coach people on resumes. And I've had countless students that have come to me and said, I worked with a career coach on my resume. They are clueless about the entertainment industry. They know nothing about how our business works because they help people get jobs at Microsoft. Right. So it's the intersection of my knowledge of the inner workings of entertainment and creativity with the career or the business coaching. That's where the value is. Right. So that's why, again, this idea of if perfection is stopping you and I don't feel like I'm good enough, you might not be good enough in any specific area, but the intersections are really where I believe the value is. And it's the emergence of those connections that I think provide so much value, whether it's content or your story, your products, your services, or otherwise.
Absolutely. And there's just a mixture with emergence, right? We have to be aware of things, but we also have to throw the stuff against the wall. And that's scary. That's vulnerable. It's not an easy thing to do. But through that balance and tension, we might discover what that next thing is for us. And that can be quite exciting.
So as is usually the case with me talking to people that are as bright and interesting as you, I've covered about 3% of the things that I wanted to cover, and we're almost pretty much to time. I have one last question that probably should have been at the beginning of the conversation, but I saved it until the end because it could easily become an entire conversation. But we've been talking about this idea of personal knowledge management, and you name dropped a couple of other concepts in a person. You name dropped Tiago Forte and the idea of a second brain. And I know that for you, a lot of times the quintessential question is, well, aren't they the same thing? What's the difference between personal knowledge and having a second brain? And the reason I asked it at the end is because we could talk about it for 90 minutes, but I wanted to just introduce the differences between them so I can send people down different rabbit holes rather than thinking they're synonyms.
Yeah, totally. So Tiago's great. We're good friends now. I would say second brain, one, it's his brand. And it's a fantastic term to talk about these sort of note-taking and making systems that we have. So I think that that term is really taken off, especially with the two books supporting it that he has. Personal knowledge management is a broad term. A lot of people that have their note systems, they'll naturally say, my PKM. And when you think about it, what they're saying is my personal knowledge management. They're talking about their system of notes. And it makes no sense to say my PKM. But that's sort of like this shorthand term. And because we're online so much, people see PKM. They know immediately what we're talking about. My PKM. My PKM does this. But technically, it's PKM system. What is personal knowledge management? Great question. But I would just say it's a way to, it gets deep on that one. But it's just a way to keep track of what matters to us. It's what matters to us is likely some form of experience, interests, ideas, memories. How do we keep track of this stuff? Some people are great storytellers. My older brother, Steve, remembers everything. Remember when we did this as kids? Okay, and Steve's great. And hopefully every family has somebody who naturally remembers these things. I'm not one of those people. I need a little bit of help. I could write it down. And I do write things down, but I do like the digital format. And that allows me to remember the things that matter. I could journal about an experience from 10 years ago and then link it to a new idea or concept I'm exposed to today. And that's the power of ideation, but it's also just wonderful. So I could think about Tom Cruise in my notes today, but I can link it to a memory of watching the original Mission Impossible with my dad and my brother Steve at the Cine 4 in Great Falls, Montana. And that just fills me up with so much joy. And it's there. Then I go out of Obsidian or my notes, and I can go off and share it with my brother. Like, you remember when we did this? How cool is that? And then he can be like, yeah, and then we did this and it was that and this happened. And so it's just a beautiful thing. I'm not trying to create an audience there. I'm just trying to live a full life that matters, that has meaning as much as possible. So that's personal knowledge management. You can call your note system a million different things. But yeah, so the overlap between second brain and there are some systems there. And those, so those systems, para in particular, is a folder-based system. And work for me. I don't think it's really needed with link-based notes, but you can use that. So second brain as a term, I'd say I love. The systems don't work as well for me in my way of thinking through link notes. That's fine. It works a lot. It works really well for people who focus less on ideation, but focus more on organization. It works really great for them there. Organization with a little bit of like, I want to be getting things done and be more productive. If you want a little bit more wandering energy, if you're a person with a lot of ideas, find an application that allows you to link notes and see where that takes you. So again, it's very easy to go off the rails when we're talking.
Oh, yes. That's why I wanted to ask this at the end. So we had the pressure to keep it tight. Yeah. But just so I better understand and so everybody else better understands, tell me if I'm characterizing this wrong. And if I'm totally off base, you can just correct me. But it sounds like personal knowledge management or having a PKM system is kind of the overall idea of collecting and organizing your thoughts. And second brain is one version or one system for personal knowledge management. So they're not necessarily synonyms. They definitely live in a similar space, but it sounds like second brain is Tiago Forte's very specific PKM system. Am I characterizing that accurately?
Yeah. Yes and no. That's where it gets crazy because the term is actually can outlive. Like there is a possibility that second brain as a term can take over PKM as a broad-based term. It just depends on how people use the language. And I think Tiago wouldn't mind that from a brand perspective. But yes, there's second brain, building a second brain that has particular systems. And I actually don't as much like the systems in my link-based world. But as far as the concept, yeah, it applies there, but it can also go more broadly and overlap. Mm-hmm. And people can say, instead of my PKM system, they could say my second brain. I threw in another one. Like, people can use Digital Garden. I threw in Ideaverse. Just to kind of, but what I promote is you, that's one of the great mysteries that you have to personally solve. What are you going to call your place? What are you going to call your thinking space? And people have called it all sorts of wild things. So I think you did the best, most, a truest form of the differences between the two. But I just do want to open up the space to say that term second brain, we don't know where it's going to land and mm-hmm. how wide in scope it might go.
Well, the reason that I bring this up, and I'm certainly putting no pressure on you personally whatsoever, but my goal is to make this a two-part podcast, because there are few, if any, people out there that I think are doing online, not necessarily influencing, but online education, teaching, building a community, and really providing value. I think Tiago Forte is on a very, very short list of people that are doing it right and doing it well. I have followed many, many people, authors, influencers, coaches, educators over the years. 98% of them are in my, I use a Sane box. So I have AI filter all of my messages. Tiago is one of the few where every newsletter hits my inbox and I read them because I really admire and respect the way that he's doing it. And I think it would be great to dive more into his perspective versus your perspective. So I'm putting it out into the universe that I would love at some point to be able to provide enough value to him that he would be willing to take the time to be on the podcast to make this a two-parter, because I think the two of you back-to-back talking about this is a game changer for anybody that wants to have a better system for not just coming up with ideas, but actually having those ideas emerge into something that goes out into the world. So,
well, I have to say that's a wonderful triangulation. Like, if you did have that two-parter, then like between that, it's a very robust and holistic education, because the way his brain and mind works is pretty fascinating. It's pretty impressive.
Well, if you know anybody that can facilitate that, you can let me know. But no pressure whatsoever. So either way, I realize we've been a little bit over time. I always prefer to do things right before doing them fast. And I really feel like we barely scratched the surface. And oftentimes I'm counting the minutes thinking, all right, we're almost at 90 minutes and I got to go off and do my other things. And I'm like, man, this is all we've got. I want to keep going. I love this conversation. But at least for now, we're going to cut it off. And I want to say that I very, very much appreciate your time, your insights. I was so glad to have you in my community. And I'm just so proud and excited about how you've taken where you were back then and what you've turned it into now. So really appreciate everything that you've done, everything that you're doing for people. And most importantly, this is the shameless self-promotion portion of the program. If you've inspired people to actually figure out how to do this stuff, where do they find you?
Oh, that's easy. Just type Linking Your Thinking either on YouTube or just in a URL browser, and then you'll find wherever you want to go.
Yeah. And you've got really well-produced YouTube content. It's very, very entertaining. Clearly you have some experience in the video production space, because there are a lot of good teachers out there that wouldn't know their way around editing or content creation to save their lives. And again, the intersection of your background in Hollywood and entertainment, it's very clear, because you've got really good, well-produced content out there.
Well, thanks for that. And it's wonderful to connect with you this way, Zach. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So on that note, I just wanted to thank you again, and I hope that we can reconnect soon.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for investing both your time and energy listening to today's show. If you were inspired by this conversation, don't forget to subscribe in your podcast app of choice, and most importantly, leave a review, because that helps move the show to the top of iTunes and get our message out there to those who need it the most. Simply visit optimizeyourself.me/subscribe to never miss another episode. Lastly, stay safe, healthy, sane, and most importantly, be well. One last thing before I lose you. If you haven't already, I want to make sure that you've subscribed to my free weekly Case of the Mondays newsletter, because it is where I share my best advice, strategies, and mindsets to help you design a creative career that you absolutely love showing up for every Monday morning. When you sign up, I'm even going to send you a bonus 5-day email course to help you clarify and prioritize the next small steps in your unique path to success. To sign up, just visit optimizeyourself.me/newsletter, and I will see you in your inbox.